The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 11, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Case of the Accidental Murderess. Episode 2, Murder in the Casbah. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to spend the next half hour listening to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, the world-famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now for the weekly visit with our good friend and host, Dr. Watson. Tonight, we find him on the stage of the Paramount Theater in Hollywood. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. If you've bought a victory bond, you're welcome.
I have, Doctor. Now, what's the recipe for tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Well, now, let me see. Take equal parts of beautiful English countryside and black villainy. Mix them, add a dash of romance, a sprinkling of danger, season well with the usual theatrical condiments, and you have the case of the accidental murderess.
Sounds like a tasty dish. How did the story begin, Doctor?
On a beautiful summer day in 1895, Holmes had just concluded his famous investigation of the sudden death of Cardinal Tosca, an inquiry which was carried out at the express desire of His Holiness the Pope. And in consequence, the great man felt that a couple of weeks' rest in the heart of Warwickshire would be a pleasant change after our rather strenuous adventures in Italy. And so, Mr. Bartell, we went to Stratford-on-Avon.
Oh, the home of Shakespeare, huh?
Quite right, my boy. As a matter of fact, that was the reason that decided us to go there. Holmes was a great lover of the drama, you know. And at the time my story begins, the Shakespearean festival was in full swing. For the first week, our life there was calm and peaceful. During the daytime, we visited the local places of interest, such as Anne Hathaway's cottage and Shakespeare's birthplace. And the evenings found us at the theater. It was on a Tuesday, I remember, during our second week's stay, that the trouble began. Holmes and I had gone for a walk through the nearby forest of Avon. He was in unusually good spirits that morning, and there was a distinct twinkle in his eye as he said,
"Watson, for once I begin to wish that I were a man of wealth."
"Oh, and what makes you say that, Holmes?"
"The beauty of this place, old fellow. I'm perfectly certain I'd be happy in retirement here. It's rather depressing to think that in a week or two, the sordid necessity of making money will demand my return to Baker Street in a world of criminals."
"No, I must say that in an environment like this, it is a little hard to think of crime. How does the old saying go? Where every prospect pleases, and only man is vile."
"Yes, but Shakespeare puts it even better, old chap."
"Oh, really? What's he say?"
"Well, surely you remember the speech in As You Like It. We saw the production 2 nights ago.
"Oh, I don't remember the speech. How did it go?"
"In this setting, it's really remarkably apposite. Are not these woods more free from peril than the envious court? Here feel we but the penalty of Adam, the season's difference. Don't you remember? Sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head. And this our life, exempt from public haunt, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything. I would not change it."
"Upon my soul, you read that much better than the fellow on the stage the other night."
"Don't tell me I adopted the wrong profession, Watson. Oh, dear me, wait a minute. Path seems to end here. Nothing but dense trees ahead of us."
"There's another path over there. I think it leads down to the river."
"Then let's follow it. The Avon is always..."
"Great Scott, that was a..." "Holmes! Holmes, you hurt?"
Yes, I think I am. Bullet hit my shoulder. I think it's only grazed it."
"Well, get off your coat quickly. Let's have a look."
"There's only a scratch. First, let's find out where it was fired from. I heard the thud of a bullet in the tree behind me. Yes, here we are. Give me a penknife, old fellow, will you?
There you are.
Thanks.
Do you suppose that that shot was deliberate?
Well, I can't imagine someone mistaking me for a rabbit, Watson. And by the way, there was a curious echo to that shot. I don't know whether you noticed it. Uh-huh. Here's the bullet. Now, let me see. I was standing there. A line from this bullet hole in the tree through the spot where I was standing would indicate that the shot was fired from that cluster of trees over there. Come on, Watson. Let's see what a search discloses.
Well, I wish you'd let me look at that shoulder before you start galloping all over the countryside, Holmes. You're bleeding quite profusely.
Well, plenty of time to look at it when we... Hello. Look over there.
A man and woman running towards us across the clearing.
Yes, and carrying guns.
Yes, it looks as if it was an accident after all.
Was anyone hurt?
Yes, sir. My friend was hit in the shoulder.
Oh, how dreadful. It's not a bad wound, is it?
Oh, it's only a scratch, madam, I hope.
But to put the blood on your coat.
Well, just how did this, this accident happen, sir?
Well, we were out rabbit shooting. I was teaching my wife to use a rifle.
I saw a rabbit scurry across the clearing. I raised the rifle and fired. It seemed to me, Geoffrey, that as I did so, you jolted my arm.
Yes, I'm afraid I did, Alice. I was going to fire, too, but as I raised my rifle, I jolted your elbow and sent your shot wild. I can't tell you how sorry I am, sir. Here's my card. Of course, we'll take care of any expenses that may be entailed.
Well, the first thing to do is to find out how much damage has been done. You'd better take your coat off, old fellow.
I don't think I can.
Oh, he's badly hurt.
No, it's just that...
The man fainted.
Oh, this is dreadful. I have a horse and trap down the road.
Excellent. Give me a hand with him, will you? I must get him to a hospital as fast as possible. Holmes, you feeling any better?
Has the nurse gone?
Yes. She's bringing the house surgeon.
And the man and his wife?
They're down in the hospital waiting room.
Oh.
I found out their name. It's Markham.
Then we're alone.
Yes, old fellow.
In that case, I can stop behaving as if I were at death's door.
Holmes, you mean that you shammed that collapse just now?
Yes, I did, Watson. Oh, well, spare me a little pity, old chap. My shoulder's confoundedly painful, I assure you.
Well, I'm sure it is. But what made you pretend to faint?
I recognized this Mrs. Markham, and I think she recognized me. It's important she assume I'm out of action for a while.
Oh?
Mrs. Markham.
Why?
Well, Mrs. Markham is, in reality, the notorious Mrs. Dangerfield. You remember the Dangerfield case?
The Dangerfield? Great Scott, yes. She was tried for the murder of her husband by poisoning, wasn't she?
Yes, she was, old fellow. She was acquitted when the jury decided she was an habitual arsenic addict who happened to take an accidental overdose.
Well, didn't you have some connection with the case?
It was I who tracked down the sale of the arsenic she claimed to have bought for cosmetic purposes.
Well, if you ask me, that shot at you was no accident.
Oh, of course it wasn't. I'm certain that I was recognized. In any case, her record is a bad one. Prior to her husband's death, there was an episode in which her uncle was killed in a shooting accident on a grouse moor in Scotland. An uncle who left her a large fortune on his death.
And I suppose Mrs. Dangerfield was a member of the shooting party when the accident happened.
Yes, she was. Now, she's something of a femme fatale, Watson. I must plan my actions very cautiously. I'm up against a dangerous opponent.
Well, you'll have to stay in the hospital until your wound's being examined and dressed.
That's true, old fellow. And while the local staff are taking care of that, I want you to shadow the Markhams.
Of course I will, Holmes.
Stick close to them, old fellow. Make them believe that I'm going to be kept here for some days. Find out as much as you can and then report to me.
Right, I'll do my best. It's awfully kind of you, Mrs. Markham, to insist on having me back to your house for lunch.
My dear Dr. Watson, after injuring the famous Mr. Holmes, it's the least I could do.
Of course it is.
Geoffrey, dear, will you bring us some sherry? It's Ada's day off, you know.
Very well, Alice. Is anyone else coming to lunch?
Only Dennis Bromley.
Oh, Lord, that fellow seems to live here. Well, I'll go and get the sherry.
Sit down, won't you, Dr. Watson?
Thank you, madam. Thank you.
You say that you think Mr. Holmes will be in the hospital for some days.
I'm afraid so. The wound wasn't serious. He lost quite a bit of blood.
Oh, I feel perfectly dreadful about it.
Well, you mustn't blame yourself too much, madam. It was an accident.
Yes, but I might so easily have killed him.
Well, you haven't, and that's all that matters. Did you say that Dennis Romney was coming to lunch? Is that the actor fellow from the Memorial Theater?
Yes. Have you seen him on the stage?
Yes, several times. Holmes and I have been going to the festival regularly since we came down here.
A fine actor, isn't he? A shame they give him such poor parts.
Well, he wasn't good.
Imagine them letting that frightful Basil Grant play Hamlet last night. Why, Dennis only played Laertes.
Yes.
Dennis is three times a better actor.
I suppose he is.
He's coaching me in acting.
Oh, coaching you? Really?
Yes, he thinks that I may be able to get small parts here next season. I've always had a great urge to go on the stage, but no one's ever encouraged me before. Oh, here's Jeffrey.
This sherry is rather special, Doctor. Jerez de la Frontera. Only a few bottles left.
Oh, that's very nice of you, sir.
Oh, that must be Dennis. I'll go let him in.
We might as well have a drink. You'll find it'll help making this actor fella more tolerable.
I take it, Mr. Markham, that you're not an admirer of Mr. Dennis Romney's.
Can't bear him. He's always quoting Shakespeare and behaving generally as if he were another Irving.
Oh,
he's got Alice completely fooled. Here's a glass, Doctor.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Dennis, I want to introduce you to Dr. Watson.
How do you do, Mr. Romney?
How do you do, sir? Hello, Jeffrey.
Want a glass of sherry?
Thanks. That'd be very nice. Are you a disciple of the theater, Dr. Watson?
Well, hardly a disciple, sir, but I've been attending the festival during the last week. I enjoyed your performances immensely, if I may say so.
Oh, you may say so, Doctor. Here's your sherry, Dennis.
Oh, don't be crotchety, Jeffrey. And please remember that Dennis is our guest.
Oh, it's all right, Alice. I know that Jeffrey's bark is a good deal worse than his bite.
And what play are you appearing in tonight, Mr. Romney?
King Lear. I shall once again portray the thankless role of the King of France.
While
that incredibly bad actor, Basil Grant, tears a multitude of passions to tatters in his rendition of Lear. Oh, horrible, horrible, most horrible.
I thought his Hamlet was atrocious last night, Dennis.
Wasn't it? When he came to his final line, "The rest is silence," was as much as I could do to prevent cheering.
I felt rather the same way when you were killed in the duel, Dennis.
Oh, Jeffrey, you're being intolerably rude. Why don't you take Dr. Watson upstairs and show him your butterfly collection? Then at least you'll know what you're talking about.
Are you interested in butterflies, Doctor? I have quite a rare collection.
Oh, really? I'd like to see them very much.
Come on, then. I think we've just got time before lunch.
Try and bring yourself down with a few better manners, Jeffrey, dear.
I'm really quite an easygoing man, Doctor, but the arrogance of that fellow Romney infuriates me.
Well, I must say, he does seem to have rather a good opinion of himself.
Don't put too much weight on that balcony rail. It's absolutely full of wormholes. Part of the attraction of an old house, my wife tells me. But I regard it as confoundedly dangerous. And this is my little museum. In these cases, I think you'll find some of the finest specimens of Lepidoptera you've ever seen. It's my hobby, and I may say that, with the exception of the Natural History Museum, I doubt if you'll find a finer collection.
It must have taken you years to collect them.
It has. Many years, many disappointments, and a great deal of patience. Look at this fella. He's my prize specimen, a North American monarch.
North American monarch? Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, isn't he? And this is an admiral.
Well, of course,
he's
I know
very
him.
Rare. And this is a perfect beehawk moth.
Beehawk
and
moth.
Here's an emperor. Ever see more exquisite markings?
Well, never. Tell me, Mr. Markham, when you captured a butterfly, how do you kill it without marking it in any way?
With poison.
Oh? What poison?
Cyanide.
Not arsenic?
You heard me say cyanide, Doctor.
The only reason I mention it is that a friend of mine collected butterflies once, and I'm certain that he always used arsenic to kill them.
Why'd you keep talking of arsenic? You're trying to hint at something.
No, my dear fellow. I was just curious, that's all.
Yes. A trifle too curious, perhaps. There's the luncheon gong. Let's go downstairs again.
I see, old man. I didn't mean to offend you.
Sure, of course you didn't. But my nerves are a little on edge today. It must be that accident to your friend that's upset him. I really must get that balcony rail mended.
Shh. What is it, sir?
My wife. And young Romney. They're going into lunch. Listen.
But darling, why won't he understand?
Oh, but you expect it to, Dennis. Jeffrey has no imagination. He's never understood
me. Well, Doctor, they say that listeners never hear good of themselves. You know, sometimes I wonder if my wife wouldn't like me out of the way. Let's go down to lunch, shall we?
And so, Holmes, that's the story up to now.
A very interesting one too, Watson. So you think that Mrs. Markham is planning to kill her husband, eh?
Oh, it's obvious. She's in love with the actor fellow, Dennis Romney. Her husband's in the way, and if she doesn't want to use poison this time, there's a perfect setting for murder in that crumbling balustrade on the landing.
Mm-hmm.
One push when he wasn't looking, and it'd be the end of him. And no one could prove that she did it.
A charming household. And Mr. Markham became very evasive, you say, when you mentioned arsenic.
Yes. I said it deliberately, of course, to see how he'd react. If you ask me, he knows that his wife has arsenic in the house. He was trying to protect her.
You've exerted your charm sufficiently to arrange to see them again, I trust.
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I have. They're taking a picnic tea and going boating on the Avon this afternoon. They asked me to join them. Of course, I agreed. I just rushed back here to the hospital to report to you first.
You've done splendidly, Watson, splendidly.
Oh, thanks so much, sir. Well, I've been so busy telling you what I've found out that I haven't asked you about you. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm fine, old fellow, fine.
What did the house surgeon discover?
A very interesting fact. Look in the drawer beside my bed, will you?
Great Scott, it's a bullet.
A bullet that the house surgeon removed from my shoulder.
But we found a bullet in the tree also.
Precisely. Therefore, two bullets were fired.
But good Lord, that means...
It means, old chap, that we have a dangerous task ahead of us. Not to solve a murder, but to prevent one.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
And now, Dr. Watson, what happened next? We left you at Sherlock Holmes' bedside in the hospital. Did the picnic with Mr. and Mrs. Markham prove an exciting one?
No, it was rather unpleasant, as a matter of fact. The three of them kept squabbling all the time, and just as we were coming home, something unforeseen occurred. Mr. Markham fell into the river.
Well, pardon the old question, Doctor, but did he fall or was he pushed?
It was hard for me to say. I had my back to him when he fell. Of course, we fished him out and rattled him back home in a trap as fast as we could. He changed his clothes at once, and as we sat round the fire a little later, I could see that he'd caught a chill. In fact, I recommended that he go to bed and stay there. Mrs. Markham agreed with me.
Jeffrey, dear, I do wish you'd follow Dr. Watson's advice and go to bed.
For the fifth time, Alice, I will not go to bed. I'm perfectly all right. Now, it's no thanks to you and Dennis.
And what do you mean by that remark, Jeffrey?
You know perfectly well what I mean. It wasn't an accident that I fell in the river just now. One of you two pushed me when I was struggling with the punt pole in the long reeds.
Jeffrey, you're talking rubbish.
Am I? You were in the boat, Dr. Watson. Didn't you see what happened?
No, I didn't, sir. My back was turned to you when you fell in.
Well, then we'll call it an accident. An accident that happened by a curious coincidence, just where the river is deepest and the reeds thickest.
Jeffrey, I don't like your tone. You can accuse me of anything you like, but when you start suggesting that
if
Alice...
If you don't like the way I talk to my wife, I suggest that you don't come to my house. I'm going to get a scarf. I'm chilly.
Dr. Watson, I must apologize for my husband's behavior. I don't know what's come over.
Oh, that's quite all right, Mr. Markham. I quite understand.
Well, I wish I did. I don't mind him yelling at me, but he's being so abominably rude to you, Alice. The last couple of weeks, it's been getting worse than ever.
I know. Ever since we had that argument about the insurance policies, he's been unbearable.
Insurance?
Yes, Doctor. We took out quite large policies on each other's lives recently.
You didn't tell me that, Alice.
Well, it was his idea. And yet, when the insurance man came here, you'd have thought I was forcing him into taking out the policy.
Insurance? Great Scott, I...
You what, Doctor?
Nothing, Mr. Markham. Nothing at all.
Sounds as if you don't approve of insurance, sir.
Oh, it's not that, Romney. It's just that I...
Who can that be? I wasn't expecting anyone. Answer the door, Dennis, will you?
Yes. Sounds as if Jeffrey has already done so.
Alice, we have a visitor.
Holmes, you shouldn't be up.
Good evening, Mrs. Markham. Hello, Watson.
Well, I'm delighted to see you, Mr. Holmes. So I understood from your friend that you'd be in the hospital for several days.
The constitution of an ox and the obstinacy of a mule, two characteristics of mine, have combined in making possible an early departure from the hospital. How do you do, Mr. Romney? I think I've seen you at the theater. My name is Sherlock Holmes.
How do you do, sir?
You'll stay to supper, I hope.
If it's not inconvenient, Mrs. Markham.
Of course it isn't. I'll go in and arrange for it.
Upon my soul, Holmes, I'm glad to see you.
And are you, old fellow? Let's take a stroll on the terrace, shall we? It's rather warm inside this evening.
You can go out through the French windows.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Markham.
Holmes, are you quite sure that you're well enough to go walking about?
Of course I am. You must tell me, Watson, what the latest developments are. In the meantime, I myself have not been idle. Yes, Watson, I think our stage is set, and I have a feeling that I may contribute to a rather dramatic last act curtain.
A delightful meal, Mrs. Markham.
Oh, well, thank you, Doctor. Mr. Holmes, you're not eating very much.
My appetite is a trifle jaded. The mental fencing that we have indulged in during the meal has been somewhat disturbing.
I don't understand you.
Oh, come now, madam. I know that you were once Mrs. Dangerfield, and you know that I know it. Why keep up the pretense any longer?
Very well, Mr. Holmes. But we needn't converse in lowered voices. I'm sure that you've told Dr. Watson whatever there is to know, and perhaps more.
I admire your courage, madam.
Geoffrey, Dennis.
Yes, sir.
I want you to listen to this. Mr. Sherlock Holmes knows that I was once Mrs. Dangerfield. He's apparently under the impression that this is a dark secret of mine. Mr. Holmes, Geoffrey knew and loved me before I ever married Mr. Dangerfield.
Of course I did, Holmes.
He stood by me during the horrible trial after my first husband's death. And I told Dennis about the whole miserable business months ago. So I really don't see that you've uncovered any great secret.
Not yet, Mrs. Markham, but I have a feeling that it's only a matter of moments.
So you haven't got any secrets from Dennis either, eh?
There's no need to shout, Geoffrey.
And there's no need for Dennis to be in my house. Get out, Romney, and stay out. This business between you and Alice has gone far enough.
I'll go when Alice tells me to.
Well, if you won't go, then I'm not going to sit here. I'm going upstairs.
You're shaking like a leaf, sir. You've got a fever. Don't you think you'd better go to bed?
Mind your own business and leave me alone.
Mrs. Markham, I really think you should persuade your husband to go upstairs and lie down.
Don't worry, Mr. Holmes. I know how to handle him. I'll take him up. Put an arm around my shoulder, Geoffrey. Come along.
We should follow them, Holmes. They have to pass that crumbling banister on the landing. With him in that state, she might try to...
What are you suggesting, Doctor?
Shh.
Come and watch. Both of you. We can observe them both from the foot of the stairs here.
They're on the landing. She's on the outside. Look, 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 look. Markham stumbled against her. He's pushed her against the railings. Look out!
Geoffrey, be careful!
Come on, Alice, are you all right?
Yes, but Geoffrey tried to push me through the railing.
That's a lie.
No, it isn't, sir. The three of us were watching you from below.
But the railing held. I don't understand.
I can explain that, Watson. This afternoon, while you were all at your picnic, I came here with a local carpenter. You had informed me, old fellow, that it was the maid's day off, and I took the liberty of reinforcing that decaying woodwork.
What the blazes do you think you've been up to, Holmes?
Preventing murder, sir, and finding the true solution to the Dangerfield case.
What do you mean, Mr. Holmes? The true solution?
Surely it's obvious to you, Mrs. Markham. You have told us that your present husband loved you before you married Mr. Dangerfield. It was he who accidentally killed your uncle so that you might inherit a fortune. It was he who accidentally gave your first husband an overdose of arsenic. Arsenic that he obtained for the purpose of destroying butterflies.
Yes, yes, yes. It was he who tried to send you to your death by pushing you through those railings. And all the time, Mrs. Markham, I thought that you were the potential murderer.
You fellows have got hold of the wrong end of the stick. All I've been trying to do is to conceal the fact that my wife was a murderess.
Geoffrey, how can you say that?
Markham, if you were
just a moment, Mr. Romney. I'm not through with him yet.
This talk is all very dramatic, Mr. Holmes, but I wonder how you're going to be able to prove it.
Dr. Watson, Mr. Romney, and I will testify to the attempt that you've just made on Mrs. Markham's life.
Yes, and what about the attempt on your life, Holmes? Obviously, it was Markham who fired at you in the woods.
But my wife has already admitted firing the shot.
True, sir. But two shots were fired. The one that your wife fired, we found at the tree. The one that you fired was extracted from my shoulder in the hospital.
Then the two shots were fired simultaneously.
You remember, Watson, that I commented at the time on a curious echo. Mrs. Markham told us that her arm was jolted as she pulled the trigger. That was when the other rifle was fired. Mr. Markham didn't want me on the scene when he staged his latest accident, and so he tried to kill me.
What kind of a devil have I been living with all these years?
I think I'm going to kill you, Markham.
Don't come near me. Keep him away from me.
Leave him to the law courts, Mr. Romney. British justice may be slow, as indeed it was in the Dangerfield case, but in the long run, it is sure. You'll find that out, Mr. Markham, on the gallows.
Well, Tell me, Doctor, did Mr. Markham finally end on the gallows?
Yes, he did. And it might interest you to know that Mrs. Markham and Dennis Romney were married. A nice chap and a fine actor, that boy.
Maybe that's what I should have been. An actor.
Hmm?
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is noble in the mind to suffer. Well, what's the matter, Doctor? Don't you like it?
The words are beautiful, but your delivery of them...
Not good, huh?
No, not good, Mr. Barnell.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of Black Peter. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now let's visit our old friend and host, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell.
Good evening, Doctor.
Settle yourself down and get your pipe going.
Thanks. Doctor, last week you told us that tonight's story took place in the Casbah at Algiers.
Yes, the Casbah. I remember it as the place of countless streets winding up and down, past colorful cafes where 100 tongues were spoken, and often a street would end in shadowy darkness, which a man would be foolhardy to enter alone. Yes, Mr. Bartell, that was the Casbah that Sherlock Holmes and I knew in that winter of 99.
Well, how did you happen to be out there, Doctor?
Do you mind if I tell you the story from the start, Mr. Bartell? It really began on a wintry night in Baker Street at the conclusion of a strange murder in Montrevor Castle. A charming young girl sat on the sofa of our lodgings in Baker Street and talked to us.
But, Mr. Holmes, you can't say you'll have nothing more to do with the Montrevors.
My dear Miss Fitzfield, I found the true murderer of the Dowager Countess and committed suicide. Surely the case has ended.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, you found the real murderer. But now I want you to find the unfortunate young man who fled England 5 years ago when he was suspected of a crime.
This is a new development, Miss Stedfielder. Please tell us about it.
It's Douglas Milton that I'm talking about.
Oh, yes, yes. He was the heir to the title, wasn't he?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. He was a sensitive, artistic boy, and when he knew that he was under suspicion, he ran away.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, everyone regarded his flight as an admission of guilt. That is, until you found the real culprit, Mr. Holmes.
I imagine, Miss Stedfield, that your interest in the missing boy is not entirely, shall we say, altruistic?
I'm in love with him, Dr. Watson.
Oh.
We were engaged to be married when he ran away. Mr. Holmes, you've got to find him. He must know that his name has been cleared and that he's inherited the title.
Miss Stedfield, have you any direct news, any letter from your fiancé since he left 5 years ago?
None.
Any clues as to his hiding place?
Only this. It's a painting I received anonymously a year after he had left.
Oh.
It was sent from a forwarding address in London. Here it is, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you.
Small oil painting. Very good one, too, sir.
Yes. His splendid sense of composition and his use of color is unusually brilliant. You recognize this painting as the work of your fiancé, Miss Stretfield?
I'm certain of it.
Yes. Wonderful use of color. Observe the delicate shadings of that sunset and the brilliant green of the oasis. This scene is extraordinarily reminiscent of the desert in North Africa.
Yes, yes, that's what made me say I was certain he'd gone abroad, Mr. Holmes.
But why should he go to North Africa?
A good place, Watson, for an Englishman who imagines himself to be escaping justice. Remember, the Foreign Legion is stationed there.
You think he might have joined the Legion, Mr. Holmes?
Right. Would seem logical. No questions are asked of those who join it, and its colorful obscurity might easily appeal to a young fellow in trouble. Hello.
What is it, Holmes?
Quite a few grains of sand between the canvas and the frame here. Miss Tredfield, do you mind if I pry the canvas loose?
Do anything you like, Mr. Holmes, if it gives you any clue to Douglas's whereabouts.
Give me your penknife, will you, Watson? Thanks, old chap. Here we are.
Can you see anything?
Uh-huh. Look. The word sheriff. An Elafroon. A stamped here. Sheriff is probably the framer's name, and Elafroon is a town some 50 miles from Algiers. That settles it. Miss Stratfield, I accept your case. Watson and I will go to Africa and try to find your fiancé, Douglas Milton.
Monsieur Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, I have heard of you so often, but I never thought I should see you here at the headquarters of the Foreign Legion. What can I do for you, gentlemen?
Well, Colonel Brisson, I'm trying to trace an Englishman who has been missing during the past 4 years. I have reason to believe that he might have joined the Legion.
Yeah, I shall look in my records. Let me see, 4 years ago would be 1895. If Sherlock Holmes is tracking him, then I suppose he was in trouble in his own country. If he was in trouble, he might easily have come to us. We ask no questions. 95. In that year, three young Englishmen joined us. One of them died of dysentery 2 years ago in Sidi Raji. One of them deserted 18 months ago, and we have been unable to trace him. The third is my adjutant who brought you into my office just now.
And he is, I would say, about 3 inches shorter than Douglas Milton, and men do not shrink in the Foreign Legion, eh, Colonel?
They do not, Miss Jones.
And the fellow who deserted must be our man.
Unless it's the one who died of dysentery. Colonel de Brisson, how would you advise us to set about trying to find a deserter?
Monsieur Holmes, there's only one place in Algeria where a man can hide from the Foreign Legion and remain hidden.
Oh, and what's that place?
The Casbah in Algiers.
Then that's our destination, Watson.
Be very careful, please, gentlemen. The Casbah is a place where the law is exiled. The police have no jurisdiction there. The only rule is that of strength, violence, and trickery.
We'll be very cautious, I assure you. Goodbye, Colonel Brisson, and thank you for your help.
I must say that I think Colonel de Brisson rather exaggerated the dangers of the Casbah. I suppose you're going to tell me this cafe is the headquarters for a dope smuggling ring or white slaving or something.
Its ramifications are even more extensive than those you've mentioned.
You're joking, Holmes.
I assure you I'm not, old fellow.
What?
My old friend Duhamel is chief of police in Algiers. When I told him our mission, he advised me to come here. A 500-franc note and the proprietor can obtain any and all information regarding the underworld. For as little as 200 francs, you can arrange a murder. So that gives you some idea of the relative values of the Casbah.
Good Lord, then you've already spoken to the proprietor?
Oh, yes, yes. A charming, scoundrelly fellow by the name of Rafi. I gave him 500 francs and asked him to set his underworld grapevine in motion to see whether an Englishman living in hiding here in the Casbah could be found.
And I thought we'd come here for a quiet meal.
Here comes Rafi now. Let's hope he has news for us. Here we are, Rafi. Come and sit down, won't you?
Rafi works fast, does he not, Mr. Holmes? Your friend is...
My friend knows that you're working with me. We'll be found out.
A drink first. The tongue of Rafi is parched. Would you have me die of thirst before I give you my news? Vermouth cassis.
BBTC, Rafi?
You have news for me, then?
But yes.
Good, what is it?
First, you will pay me more money, no?
But I gave you 500 francs. You said that you'd do the job for that.
Can I help it if some tongues are more costly to make wag than others? It took the 500 to get the wag. Am I to have nothing for my own trouble?
Votre vermouth cassis, Monsieur Rafi.
Ah, good, good. The gentleman will pay for it.
There you are.
Merci, Missy.
I will drink to your health, gentlemen, both of you. You will pay me more money, no?
But my friend's already given you 500. You should stick to your bargain, my good fellow.
My information is a bargain at 750 francs. It would be a bargain at 1,000, but Rafi will let you have it for 750 because he likes you.
I see.
You will give it to me, no?
And if I refuse?
Then you get no information and perhaps I spread news in the Casbah that makes it uncomfortable for you gentlemen to be there.
Great Scott, this is blackmail.
I get the money, no?
You're a scoundrel, Rafi.
Of course I'm a scoundrel.
Here's your money. And information?
There is an Englishman hiding here in the Casbah. I do not know his name, but he is tall and fair-haired. I cannot tell you where he lives, but if you go to the Café of a Thousand Sighs, you will find a girl who sings there. A girl who sings like a nightingale. Her name is Aisha, and she can lead you to your Englishman.
A girl named Aisha, in the Café of a Thousand Sighs.
That is right. I would suggest that you go there in disguise. Two well-dressed Englishmen might find themselves in trouble. For a small fee, say 200 francs, I will escort you there myself.
Thank you, yes. I think we can manage by ourselves, Rafi.
If your business is concluded quickly and time weighs heavy on your hands, Rafi can take you to some places of rare interest. Dancing girls that wither one's eyeballs with their beauty. For 500 francs, gentlemen...
Thank you, Rafi. I have a feeling the time will not weigh heavily on our hands. Good night.
You work too hard, gentlemen. You should learn how to play. Good night.
On my soul, I think that fellow's the biggest blackguard I ever met.
I quite agree, old chap, but he is amusing.
By the way, Holmes... Don't you think that when this case is finished, we might have a time on our hands?
Oh, Watson, you're incorrigible. But I think... Watson.
What is it?
Got the man sitting over in the corner by himself.
Oh, Joe, yes. His face seems familiar. We've seen him before somewhere.
Of course we have. His name is Oliver Leeming. We met him at the inquest on the Montrevor case.
So we did. Now, what on earth do you suppose he's doing here in the Casbah?
Not on a holiday, I'm sure. Mr. Oliver Leeming, if you recall, is a cousin of Douglas Milton's. The man we're searching for. If Milton were ever declared legally dead, Mr. Leeming over there would inherit the title.
It looks to me as if we're not the only people in the Casbah who are searching for the missing heir.
That's true, old fellow. Come on, let's go and talk to the gentleman. Mr. Oliver Leeming, how very odd to meet you here.
Well, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, won't you sit down?
Thank you.
World's a small place, isn't it? Or has somebody said that before? I wondered if you'd spot me over here in the corner.
Oh, you saw, sir.
Of course. You seem to be in such deep conversation with that scoundrel, Rafi. I didn't like to disturb you.
Very considerate of you, I'm sure. Why are you here, Mr. Leeming?
Oh, I'm making a business trip. This is my day off.
As I recall it, you're in the publishing business.
Correct. What a memory you have.
It seems peculiar that you should be on a business trip here. Are you planning on opening a publishing house in Algiers, or are you searching the Casbah for new authors?
Why not? I'm a great believer in encouraging new talent.
Mr. Leeming, why don't you admit that you're here for the express purpose of trying to find your cousin, Douglas Milton?
Mr. Holmes, you've discovered my secret. The great Sherlock Holmes and his watchdog have their eager eyes on me. They know that I succeed to the title if Douglas Milton dies.
Yes, Mr. Leeming, we know that fact.
And you have fathomed my plan to find Douglas before me and kill him so that I may inherit the title. How lucky I am to meet you in the Casbah, where you cannot arrest me. Well, it's a race against time, gentlemen, but I have a head start, as you will soon find out. Goodbye, and the best of luck to you.
Extraordinary fellow. He's joking, of course.
I believe not, Watson. I think he labors under the whimsical belief that the best method of discounting the truth is to state it as baldly so that it will not be believed.
Great Scott, then we must work fast.
Yes, old chap, we must. I'm sure that we're entrants in a race against death. We must get back to the hotel and into our disguises as quickly as possible. After that, we shall visit a young lady named Aisha in the Café of a Thousand Sighs. And I'm certain, Watson, that it will be the first time two men have ever entered the Casbah for the express purpose of preventing a murder.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Doctor, I can hardly wait to hear what happened next. You and Sherlock Holmes went back to the hotel, I suppose.
Yes, Mr. Hartell. Holmes quickly adopted the disguise of an Arab guide, while I assumed the role of a tourist. And we started off on our search. Outside the Café of a Thousand Sighs, we met with a rude shock. Good Lord. It's the fellow we met in the cafe.
Yes, Oliver Leeming, with a knife between his shoulders.
He's dead, Holmes. Shouldn't we get in touch with the police?
What can they do? Remember, there is no law on the Casbah. In any case, this man is beyond our help. Our job is to protect the living. Come on, old fellow. Let's go to the cafe of 1,000 sighs and find this girl, Aisha. The girl, Rafi says, sings like a nightingale.
Je l'appelle ma petite bourgeoise, ma tonkiki, ma tonkinoise. Rien à d'autre qui me font le doux yeux, mais c'est elle que j'aime le mieux.
So that's the girl, Aisha. She's very beautiful.
Don't forget our role of tourist and guide, old chap.
Master, would you meet this Aisha?
Very much indeed.
I will see if it can be arranged, Master.
Wait here for me, Watson. I'll see what I can do.
Right, you are, Holmes. Be careful, huh?
Mademoiselle Aisha?
What do you want, greasy one?
There is an Englishman at the table over there. He wishes to talk to Aisha.
Which one is he?
The man who sits at the table in the corner. He is very rich, Aisha, and he admires you a great deal. He told me to give you this 500-franc note.
So? Very well. You may bring him to my rooms. The door is at top of stairway, to the right.
Good, Aisha. I fetch him.
I shall be waiting.
Aisha, I will see you, Master. Follow me, please.
Oh, very well. I hope you know that you're going to handle this, Holmes.
Don't worry, Watson. In this case, I think honesty will be the best policy.
Well, I'm not so sure. This place is a thieves' kitchen if ever I saw one. You'd better be careful.
First door to the right at the top of the stairs. This is it.
Come in. Oh, come and sit over here, Mr. Englishman. Greasy one, you may leave us.
Mademoiselle, I may as well tell you at once that I am not an Arab guide. My name is Sherlock Holmes.
What do you want with me? Why you trick your way in here?
Don't be frightened, mademoiselle. I can explain our mission in a very few words. My friend and I have come in search of an Englishman by the name of Douglas Milton. We have good news for him.
What make you think I might know of him?
A gentleman by the name of Rafi suggested that you might.
What is your good news for this Englishman?
That he has been cleared of suspicion of murder and that he is the rightful Earl of Montrevor.
That means when he knows this, he will leave the Casbah and return to his country?
Naturally, madame.
I do not know this man. I have never heard of him. Here is your 500 francs. Goodbye.
Not so fast, Aisha, mon petit chou. I've been listening from behind these curtains. Gentlemen, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Douglas Milton.
Douglas Milton, we find you at last.
It gives me infinite pleasure to have succeeded in my mission. How do you do, sir?
Oh, this is very exciting.
It is indeed.
Yes, I think the occasion calls for a drink. What will it be, gentlemen?
Well, I think a glass of port would be very nice, sir.
Yes, it would be the most appropriate for toasting the new Earl von Trevor.
Splendid, splendid. Aisha, bring glasses and a bottle of port and some creme de menthe for me.
You are not going to England. I will never let you leave me.
Oh, stop being so melodramatic, Aisha. Please bring two bottles and some glasses.
Very well. I am sorry.
Mr. Holmes, I can't tell you how I appreciate your trouble in coming all this way to find me. But I must tell you at once, there's one problem that makes it difficult for me to leave this country. You see, I deserted from the Foreign Legion.
Yes, 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 we know that, my boy. In fact, that's how we first got onto your trail.
I shouldn't let that fact worry you, Mr. Milton. I'm certain the British consul in Algiers can arrange to have any charges dropped against a peer of the realm.
Oh, well, I never thought of that.
Here are the bottles.
You must excuse the glasses, gentlemen. Tumblers are hardly cooked, I suppose, but... Well, they won't spoil the flavor, I'm sure. Ah, two glasses of port and a creme de menthe for me. Only three glasses, Aisha? Bring a glass for yourself.
I do not wish to drink.
And I insist that you do. Bring a glass, Aisha.
Why should I drink if you are leaving?
Mr. Milton, do you know Oliver Leeming?
Well, of course, he's my cousin. Yes, he came here half an hour ago and threatened me.
Did you also know that he's lying dead in the street? Murdered?
Well, yes, yes, I did. If we went in the cars by, I wouldn't tell you this, but Aisha stabbed him. She followed him when he left here. He killed him and then slipped back just in time to sing a song a few moments ago. Oh, you needn't look so shocked, Dr. Watson. Life is cheap in the Casper, and Aisha is a girl of violent passions. Come on, let's drink.
A toast to the new Earl of Montrevor.
Oh, excuse me, sir. You took the wrong glass. You were drinking my port.
Oh, silly mistake. I can't bear port. Very English of me, I'm afraid, but, well, after all these years, I don't feel particularly English. In fact, I'll probably find it very hard to adjust myself to the old life when I go back. Or perhaps I should say, if I go back.
Since you feel that way about it, Mr. Milton, why go? You can claim the title and the revenues of the estate without leaving Algeria. You could stay here and live on the income.
I didn't realize that would be possible. You sure I could do that?
Oh, yes, I'm quite certain of it.
Hmm.
But if you doubt my word, I suggest we all adjourn to the British consulate in Algiers. They can put you straight on the matter.
That's a good idea. Let's go over there at once.
Now, I've been listening to you, my friend. You're planning to leave me. Once you go from the Casbah, I shall never see you again.
Put down that knife, Aisha.
I will not let you go. You belong to me. If you try to leave me now, I will kill you.
Put down that knife, Aisha. You've done enough damage for one night.
Why, you...
Put it down, you fool. Put it
let
down.
Let me go. Let me go.
She twisted the knife on herself as she fell.
Holmes, help me turn her over. She's dead, Mr. Milton.
Poor Aisha.
It's a bloody path that leads to the Montrevor title, sir. I suggest that we see that the poor girl's body is taken care of. And then go to the British consulate without any further delay. Now that we're at the consulate, Milton, I suggest that you swear on oath that you are Douglas Milton, heir to the Montrevor estate. This gentleman is a commissioner of oaths, and we can go in and see the consul.
Very well.
Now, raise your right hand, please, and repeat after me. I hereby solemnly swear that I am Douglas Milton, the missing heir to the Montrevor estate.
I hereby swear that I am Douglas Milton, missing heir to the Montrevor estate.
Thank you, sir. And now, if you'll sign the statement here, these gentlemen can witness it.
There you are.
Thank you, sir. And now, if you gentlemen will sign.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you, gentlemen. The document is now legal.
Splendid. Now let's go over and see the consul.
Not yet, my friend. Watson, this man is not Douglas Milton.
What the devil are you talking about?
There is no law on the Casbah, sir, so you cannot be punished for the two murders you committed there. But now that your avarice has tempted you here to Algiers, where you've been foolish enough to sign a false statement, I think we can at least settle you very nicely for desertion, false impersonation, forgery and perjury.
What do you mean?
The story should be obvious, old fellow. Oliver Leeming did track down the deserter. Recognition was uncertain after so many years, but at least it gave this gentleman the idea of impersonating the real Douglas Milton, a friend of his.
You have a lively imagination, Mr. Holmes.
The real Douglas Milton died of dysentery 2 years ago in Sidi El Raj. As soon as the idea of impersonating Milton was born, Leeming had to die.
Your theories are very interesting, but you haven't a shred of proof. I say that I'm Douglas Milton. How are you going to prove otherwise?
Very simply, my dear sir. Douglas Milton was a painter. A painter who excelled in the use of vivid colors. You, sir, suffer from the quite common malady of red-green color blindness. Less than an hour ago, you mistook a glass of port, which is red, for a glass of creme de menthe, which is green. I knew at once that you were an imposter.
You're cleverer than I thought you were, Holmes. Goodbye.
Here, come back.
No, Watson. Don't go after him.
But we can't let him escape, Holmes.
Don't worry, old chap. He won't escape. I sent a message to Colonel Dupont. If you go to the window, I think you'll find that the consulate is being watched. The Legion has a long memory for desertion. I don't think he'll get very far.
They got him, Holmes. Shot him as he was trying to run away.
A just death for him. Lived a life of violence and treachery, Watson. It's only fitting that he should die in the same manner.
Doctor, that was a swell story, but you know something? I wish you hadn't disillusioned me about the Casbah.
Disillusioned you? Why? What do you mean?
Well, before I heard your story, whenever somebody mentioned the Casbah, I'd always visualize a very glamorous, romantic sort of place full of beautiful women. Every one of them a ringer for Hedy Lamarr.
No.
Yep. And I could just see myself, handsome, dashing, going up to one of those beautiful girls and whispering in my fine French accent, "Darling, you are sensational. You are lovely, gorgeous." Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Crooked Man. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio. All rights reserved.